This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The so-called last dictator in Europe faces strong public opposition after a contentious weekend election. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Demonstrations have taken place throughout the night across Belarus after exit polls showed the country's president, Alexander Lukashenko, who's been in power for 26 years, won re-election with 80% of the vote, though the opposition contests that. That's the sound of police in the capital of Minsk using tear gas, water cannons, and stun grenades to push back thousands of protesters who claim the polls were rigged. The BBC's Sergei Goryashko explains how economic malaise has fed into high levels of public discontent.
For the last year, there have been lots of economic problems. One of them is that Russia decided to end subsidized oil and gas supplies to Belarus, because the relations have cooled. Struggling Belarus economy relies on trade with its powerful neighbor Russia. This cooling in the relations, of course, has affected Belarus economy, and the coronavirus pandemic has affected it as well.
Vladimir Putin today congratulated Mr. Lukashenko on his victory. But as you say, the ties to Moscow have become increasingly strained. So what does that mean for President Lukashenko's ability to navigate Belarus out of this economic recession it's found itself in?
There were some rumors that Kremlin's plan was to integrate Belarus in Russia, like Kremlin has done that with the Crimea back in 2014. But Lukashenko and the Belarusian people obviously against this. And Kremlin was not happy with that, which is why they decided that they don't want to be like brothers with Belarus anymore. They will be like partners, and they won't help Belarusian economy so much.
Does President Lukashenko have a plan to revive the economy?
He hasn't presented any real plan. He's just telling that chief Russian ally. But these are just words. I think that will all depend on the negotiations with Russian authorities and on Putin's and Lukashenko's wills to build a better relationship.
The BBC's Sergei Goryashko in Moscow. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Victoria.
Checking financial markets, shares of Hong Kong media company Next Daily jumped at least 180% today. That's after the company, owned by media tycoon and pro-democracy activist Jimmy Lai, was detained under a controversial new Hong Kong security law. Analysts say shares rallied in apparent support for Mr. Lai and the company's newspaper, Apple Daily, which has vowed to continue publishing. Meanwhile, European stocks gave up early gains after China said it'll sanction U.S. officials, including Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. That's in response to Washington's decision Friday to issue its own sanctions on Hong Kong and Chinese officials. Further flaming tensions between the world's two biggest economies today is U.S. Health Secretary Alex Azar's visit to Taiwan. It's the highest-level American visit to the island in years, as the BBC's Monica Miller reports.
Secretary Azar has praised Taiwan's leadership for its successful handling of the coronavirus and said the U.S. recognizes the island as an open democratic society. This trip isn't going over well with Beijing officials. China regards the island as a breakaway province. It urged the U.S. to respect what it calls its One China principle. The U.S. severed ties with Taiwan in 1979 to establish a diplomatic relationship with China's Communist Party. I'm the BBC's Monica Miller for Marketplace.
The coronavirus pandemic has highlighted vulnerabilities in the global economy, but rather than patch up what's broken, why not dream up better ways of operating? That's the idea behind a one-hour special report from Marketplace called The Economy Reimagined. I took a deep dive into the world of higher education to find out how systems here in Europe could influence reform to tackle America's more than $1.5 trillion student debt crisis. One potential model could echo what's being done in many parts of the UK. Students here take out government loans, but they only start paying them back once their income rises above about $34,000 a year. Professor Nicholas Barr at the London School of Economics explains the benefit.
It's got built-in insurance against inability to repay. If you borrow from me and your income is low, then your repayments are automatically low or zero. And if your income is low for a period because you're taking time out of the labour force for whatever reason, and then you come back and your income goes up, then you start making repayments, and the more you earn, the more you repay.
So does this sliding scale for repayments make the education system more inclusive then, do you think, especially for lower income households who may worry about their future earnings potential?
Yes, it does. What the evidence shows in Britain is that there are two things that stop people from disadvantaged backgrounds going to higher education. One is worry about debt, but it's also a question of putting serious effort into improving attainment of students from poorer backgrounds in primary and secondary school.
Do you think a free education system would work better?
No, I don't. The question is who pays? It's still the case, regrettably, that the people who go to university are disproportionately middle class. If it's tax financed, then the taxes of the truck driver pay for the degree of the old Etonian. The reality is, when you look at the time in England when higher education was free and there were grants to cover maintenance costs, of 100 students from a middle class background, 85 went to university. And of 100 students from working class backgrounds, 15 went to university.
Are there places in the world where free education does work, like Germany or France, for example?
The problem in Germany and France, particularly France, is it's free and anyone can go to university. So you've got lots of students, but not very good university finance. So you've got huge classes in the first year, not much teaching and a high dropout rate. The countries where it does work are the Scandinavian countries, where there is a political economy settlement where people are prepared to pay high taxes in return for high-quality public services. And because they get the high-quality public services, they're prepared to pay higher taxes. Those countries have very good nursery education, very good school education, and therefore the class gradient in participation in higher education is much less pronounced than it is in most European countries or the US.
That conversation with Nicholas Barr from the London School of Economics is just a taste of our one-hour special report on the economy reimagined. It's hosted by fellow Marketplace Morning Report hosts David Brancaccio and Kimberly Adams. The special begins airing today, but if you miss it live, you can stream it at marketplace.org. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.